Well, here we go again. We've been talking about adolescence and this exciting time of life that's coming for most of you who are listening to this tape. We've talked about inferiority and conformity and how that influences our lives. We've talked about physical and sexual development and the meaning of love and all of these important things that are going to be taking place. And now on this fifth tape, we'll be dealing with the little loose ends that remain. Those remaining things that I think you ought to be acquainted with before adolescence comes in upon you. And as I see it from here, there are about five more important topics that we ought to cover in this short period of time. So let's get going. First of all, let's talk about what the feelings will be like during the teen years. By feelings, I mean the hopes and the dreams and the fears and the irritations and the love and the regret and the disappointment and all the different feelings that you're likely to have during that time. Now, we have a word for all those kinds of feelings, and we call them emotions. And you can expect to feel these emotions very deeply during the next few years. You know, there's a new game that's out right now, and it's called Tell It Like It Is. And I don't know if you can buy it in the store yet. At the time that this tape was made, the game was not very available in many of the stores. I hope it is now, because it's an excellent little game. And the purpose of it is to get you talking to each other, to get you to reveal that side of yourself that's kept down there where nobody can see it, to get you to explain your feelings and your attitudes to other people around you and to help them explain themselves to you. And in the world that we live in, where we watch television about 20 hours a week and we sit with our chin in our hands, and nobody is listening to anybody else, and nobody is talking to anybody else, we're absorbed in the television production, one right after another, that comes along. We need this kind of opportunity to express ourselves, and that's why I think this is such an outstanding idea. But we were playing this game in my own family the other day, and the idea of it is to take a stack of cards, which are turned face down, and you pick them up one at a time, and when it's your turn, you read what the card says, and then you have to do what the card tells you to do. And on each card is a statement telling you to reveal something or to make some comment. For example, one of them says, what do you most like about yourself? Well, if you draw that card, you explain that. Another one says, what do you think makes a happy marriage? Or what things make your life complicated? Or do you ever feel lonely? When? Or what one quality do you look for most in friends? You see, and as you go through each one of these, then you give your answer and then other people comment on it, and it's something for the group to talk about. You usually play it with 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 people. Well, we were playing this game the other night with just my own family. So there was my wife and my two children there, and the four of us were playing it. And I was asked to explain the saddest day of my life. And I thought for a moment about it. My mind went back through childhood, and it rested on a day that I had not remembered for a long time. And then I described an incident that I hadn't told anybody. I hadn't even told my own wife about this, but I really believe that this day was the saddest day of my life. It occurred when I was 13 years of age. I was in the 7th grade. And my dad came to get me at lunchtime at school. Now, he had never done that before. My dad never came to school, particularly during the middle of the day. And he came in, I was with a group of my friends, and he said he would like me to go home with him. And I saw by the look on his face that something was wrong. And I walked out to the car with him, and I was afraid to ask, and knew that he was about to give me some bad news. When we got in the car, he said, Jim, I do have some bad news for you, and I want you to take it like a man, because something has happened. And I said, is it my mom, Dad? And he said, no. I said, then it's my dog, isn't it? And he said, yes. Now, it doesn't seem like much of a big deal today, losing a mere dog. You know, that's not like losing a human being. But my dog, Pippi, was my very special friend, and I can't describe to you how I felt about Pippi. He was the one that I talked to when things went wrong. and he was always there. I could count on it. When I had a bad day, I could come home and Pippi was there. He was glad to see me. He was in a good mood. He was happy. And I would take him out in the backyard, and we would play together. And he was my own special little friend. We had something going between us that nobody could understand. And I loved that dog. I have to tell you, I loved that dog almost as much as I loved a lot of human beings in my life. My dad went on to describe to me what had happened. He said that my mother was driving home in the car, and Pippi was excited to see her, and he went running up the street to greet the car. And he jumped up on the side of the car as she drove by, and he apparently missed, and he fell under the wheel of the car, and the wheel ran over his back and broke his back. And my mother was looking in the rearview mirror when she hit him. She knew what had happened. And she jumped out of the car, and Pippi dragged himself over to the side of the road and then back into the center of the road, and then he couldn't move anymore. She walked up to him and bent over him and talked softly to him, and he couldn't move. He was paralyzed. And he rolled his little brown eyes up to her when she came up to him, and then she saw that his little tail was wagging behind. And his tail was still wagging as Pippi died there, even though she had run over him. And she was the one that had caused his death. He greeted her with the tail wagging as he died. That night, we buried little Pippi out behind the grapevine in the backyard. And we dug a little hole and had a little funeral back there. And I reached down and I stroked the bloody fur of my little dog. And in my childish gesture of love, I took a penny out of my pocket and I laid it on his chest just before we covered him up. I don't know why. It was just my way of saying that I loved him. And tears streamed down my face. And my dad, who had told me he wanted me to take this like a man, shed a few tears of his own that night. Now, there have been greater tragedies in my life since then. There have been greater losses. There have been days that have been hard to take. And there have been more important days, certainly. But there have been no sadder days in my life than that day. Because everything is experienced king-sized when you're young. Those of you who are listening to me now, do you remember the very first chocolate-covered cherry that you ate as a child? Can you remember how it tasted? How great it was? I got my first one in the doctor's office after I had fallen and split open my lip when I was in the first grade. And I was such a brave little boy, supposedly. He gave me a chocolate-covered cherry. I had never tasted anything like that. I can still remember it today. For weeks after that, the taste of that chocolate-covered cherry was there in my mouth, and I longed for another one. It's not that big a deal today because the feelings are not as strong in adulthood as they were in childhood. Do you remember your first Ferris wheel ride and what it was like? Do you remember your first trip to the dentist and what you felt there? I'm sure you remember that one. You see, when you're young, the pleasures, the good things, are more astounding and the pain is more intolerable during the years of childhood and adolescence. Now, why have I told you this? What does it mean for you? It means that your feelings will probably be very intense, very strong during your own adolescence. That's just the way adolescence is. Little things that won't bother you later on in life will gnaw on you and will make you uncomfortable at times. Your fears will be more frightening. The pleasures will be more exciting. The irritations will be more agitating. Your frustrations will be more intolerable. Everything is king-size during adolescence. And this is why teenagers are often so explosive, why they do things without thinking, and why they often wind up regretting their behavior. They're sorry they've done what they've done. And it was because their feelings run very deep and are so powerful during those teen years. Now, even though most of you are not yet in your teens, I would think, there are several things that I'd like you to remember about the emotions or the feelings during adolescence? First, they tend to go from high to low to high to low to high to low. Big deal, you say. What does that mean? What it means is that when you're depressed and you're unhappy and you're blue and nothing is going right and life doesn't seem to be worth living and you're just down, down, down and everything is gray and black and blue, just hang tight because you won't stay down there very long. If you won't get completely discouraged, things will change and the sun will come up again. And this is important, you see, to know that when you're down, you're going to come up. It's also important not to make any big decisions when you're down there, because you're probably going to make the wrong decision on the basis of your own depression. Sooner or later, you'll wake up in the morning and you'll just be glad to be alive again. And you'll get up and you're happy and it's wonderful and you'll whistle at the birds and wave at the flowers and sing zippity-doo-dah all day long. And there won't be a single cloud in the sky. And all I can tell you about that feeling is that it won't last either. You see, few people stay extremely happy or very depressed for very long. And as I said, the usual pattern is to go up and down like a yo-yo. In fact, all of us are yo-yos in that way. So when you're high, expect to come down, and when you're low, expect to come up, and then you won't be disappointed when it happens. This is the way the human emotions operate. Part of it depends on how much sleep you've had and what kind of health you're in and how well things are going in your life. So there's just this up and down kind of cycle that goes on. So don't get too discouraged when you're down because you know that it's going to change again. Second thing I want you to know about this feelings is that your impressions are not very reliable. Now, an impression is a thought that you get, which you may believe comes from God or from somewhere unknown. For example, I know a young man who was riding down the street in a car, and he got the strong feeling, the strong impression that he would soon die. This thought just came to him. He's riding along, and in his ears, he hears this message, "Your life is almost over." And he thought God was telling him this. You see, he thought God was preparing him for his own death by giving him this kind of warning thought. And the sweat began to form on his forehead, and his mouth went dry, and his hands got sweaty, and his heart began to race, because he really thought that this might be the very last day of his life. And he was terrified. You see, he believed his impression was absolutely true. But I can assure you that that young man is still alive and he's doing fine, as best I can tell, unless he's a ghost. But he certainly looks real enough, I can tell you that. See, you may have an impression of any kind. Impressions are these kinds of feelings, and if you believe them, it can make you do wrong things. I know a man who awoke in the middle of the night when he was in college, and he had the impression that he ought to marry a girl that was in college also, and he hardly knew her. I don't think he'd had more than one or two dates with her. But he believed God was telling him to do this. So the next day, he picked up the phone and he called her, and he told her that God had told him to marry her. Well, she decided that she couldn't argue with God, so they were married shortly thereafter. And they've really had some tough problems to handle since then. You see, they hardly knew each other, but they believed their impressions. And impressions are dangerous because they change from morning to night to morning to night. And usually your impressions are not to be believed. You can fool yourself with your impressions. I would suggest that you make no big decisions on the basis of a vague feeling of one sort or another. Your mind just might be playing tricks on you. And if God is really talking to you, you can tell by following these five steps. First, talk to another Christian about it, somebody in whom you have confidence that you can share your idea with. Secondly, read the Bible for direction. If God's in it, He'll talk to you through His Scripture, and He will never ask you to do anything that contradicts His Word. I can promise you that. Number three, watch to see what doors open and what doors close. Again, if God is in this leading, He'll work through what we call providential circumstances. He will open the opportunities for you to do what he wants you to do. So you watch them closely and see how he works in your life. And number four, give yourself some time to think. Don't make any big decisions while you're in a state of confusion. That's a good principle to follow throughout your life. When you're not real sure what to do, don't do anything if you can help it. Avoid a decision until you have more confidence about what's right. And number five, of course, is to pray for God's guidance and blessing and leading. Well, these are just a few suggestions on how to handle the strong feelings and emotions that are going to be there during adolescence. Don't believe them just at face value. The feelings that you have may not be totally accurate, so don't let them fool you and don't let them push you into making decisions that you'll regret later. This is the greatest danger of the teenage years, that these strong feelings will lead you to jump into marriage or to run away from home or to quit school or to start using drugs or to make one of these long-term, lifetime decisions that'll influence you when you're 50 years old if you live that long. It's best to realize that these strong feelings are part of being a teenager and not to go leaping into anything that'll foul up the rest of your life and to be kind of cautious about the whole thing. There are other things that I could say to you, but you may not be quite ready for it yet. Let me just add this one comment. There's a tendency during the teenage years to feel that today is forever, that it is never going to change, that the problems you have today are going to be that way the rest of your life. For example, many teenagers who are unpopular in school, who don't feel anybody likes them, who don't think anybody cares, who feel inferior, like Danny, you remember from the first tape, they feel that they'll always be that way. They will always be in school and will always be left out. And those friends out there, I say friends, those people out there who don't like them, will always be there not liking them. In truth, however, it's all passing so quickly. In just a very few years, all of those students in school with you will graduate and leave and be spread all over the world, and you couldn't bring them back like it is today with $1 million. You couldn't put it back together again. It's like Humpty Dumpty. It shatters, it splits, and there's no way to reconstruct it. So if you find yourself miserable for one reason or another today or during adolescence, just hang on. It will change. That's one certainty about life. It won't remain the same very long. It will change. And probably it will change for the better. All right, let's talk about the second thing about adolescence that I think you ought to know. And this is a delicate issue, and I want you to listen very closely, because it's going to explain something that is very likely to occur. And by that, I'm talking about the conflict between generations. You know what that means? That means the tug of war, the strong feeling, maybe the resentment, maybe the irritation that's likely to occur between you and your parents during the teenage years. Now, how can I predict that that's going to happen? How can I know that there's likely to be this struggle that takes place between generations, between you and your parents during the years to come? The reason is because when you were born 10 or 12, 14 years ago, you were completely and totally dependent upon your parents. That means that your entire existence depended upon your parents. You could do nothing for yourself. You couldn't roll over. You couldn't scratch your head. You couldn't ask for food, except with that agitating scream that God had equipped you with so you could urge them into action. But you could do nothing for yourself. You had to depend completely on your parents. And gradually, you see, as you grew and as you learned and as you developed, they began getting free from that responsibility. Pretty soon, you could hold your own bottle. Pretty soon, you learned to sleep through the night. Then you learned to crawl. Then you learned to walk. And each time you learned something new, your parents didn't have to do it for you anymore. And instead of having to carry you everywhere, you could walk now. And instead of having to wash behind your ears, you got old enough to wash in the tub yourself. And instead of picking up your blocks, and making your own bed and giving you every cent that you needed. You learned to do these things for yourself. You learned to hold down a job. You learned to work. You learned to think for yourself. Each new thing that you developed, your parents were freed from doing that for you, and you became more independent of them. Now, in the end of childhood, over at the other end of adolescence, about 18, 19, 20 years of age, this process is going to be completed. Are you following me now? I know it's a long answer, but this is an important understanding for you. Someday, you will be completely free of your parents. You will decide when to go and when to come, and who to spend your time with, when to go to bed, what to eat, exactly what you're going to do with your life. You will decide whether or not you're going to worship God or not worship Him. Your parents won't be able to force it on you anymore. In fact, your relationship with your parents will be more as a friend then, instead of one telling the other one what to do. You see, you're going from no responsibility in birth, where you depended totally on your parents, over to freedom and full responsibility in adulthood. That's what childhood is all about, is this procession or progression from one extreme to the other. Now, so what? What's that have to do with the conflict I was talking about? Well, usually, as a teenager gets to be 14, 15, 16 years of age, he gets the picture of what this freedom is going to be like, and he wants it to come very quickly. He wants to make his own decisions. He wants to say when he goes to bed. He wants to say when he gets up. He wants to say whether he works or not. He wants to eat what he wants to eat. He wants a lot of freedom, but he doesn't want the responsibility that goes with it. This is a natural thing. I hope that it won't happen too strongly in your case, but it probably will. And when it does, understand it. Now, let me explain what I mean. You see, when you're 16 years of age, you don't want anybody telling you when to come in. But you want a roof over your head, and you want mom to iron your shirts and have them hanging there in the closet. And you want them to pay the doctor bill when you get sick and to bail you out when you get into trouble, you see. You want the freedom without the responsibility that goes along with it. And usually the tug of war between a child and his parents takes place when the parent is turning him loose and realizes that time is coming when he's going to be completely free, but can't let him go altogether because he's not old enough yet. And a child wants it to come faster. Now, let me tell you that when this conflict occurs between you and your parents, it does not mean that your folks don't love you. It does not mean that you don't love your folks. It is just this natural thing that occurs when you want more freedom than you're really ready for. And the best thing for you is to yield to their leadership. This doesn't mean they're treating you like a baby. And if you feel they're not turning you loose fast enough, and if you feel you're ready for more responsibility as well as freedom, because they go together, then go to your parents and talk to them about it and tell them that you really feel that you're old enough to make these decisions for yourself. And along with it will come more work and more responsibility, more things that go along with adulthood. And I think you can learn to talk to each other along this line without screaming and door slamming, and you want to go to the party Friday night and your parents aren't sure who you're going with, and they know that it's best for you not to be with people who don't have the same kind of values and attitudes and love for God that you do, and you get mad and you come in and you scream and stomp and all that. It's not necessary to go through all that. Learn to talk to each other. Learn to express your feelings to each other. Learn to say to your parents, if I will do so-and-so, will you do so-and-so? Negotiate with each other, you see. And maybe this conflict will not be quite so severe. If you were my child at this moment, I would give you a message. I would say something to you, which I probably will say to my own child, and which I hope your parents will also say to you. The message is this. I want you to know that I love you. I love you more than anything in the world, and I would probably give my life for you. In fact, I'm sure I would if I was called on to do it. And that love is going to guide everything that happens between us during adolescence. And there may be times during the next few years when you will want me to give you more freedom than I feel you're ready for. And you will probably want me to turn you loose and let you go where you want and do what you want to faster than I think you're ready. And when I feel that I can't do that, I'm not going to do it because I love you too much. But I am always going to have your best interest at heart, and I want you to know that. You may resent it when I hold the line on you. You may not fully understand at that time that it is love that keeps me from letting you do whatever you want. And when you resent it, there's this feeling there between us. So there may come a time in the next few years when there'll be some resentment and some friction between us. Let's just remember that when it occurs, it is really love that's causing it to be done. Because the easiest thing in the world would be for me to just let you go. The easiest thing would be to say, I don't care who you're with or when you come in and how fast you drive the car, and you just make your own decisions. What kind of grade you make in school, I'll stay completely off your back. I won't say a word about it. See, that's not love. If I did that, there'd be no friction between us, but it would not be in your best interest. So there's probably going to be some feeling between us, but when it happens, let's just remain steady and realize what's really taking place, and we can remain friends. And I think when you come through this age and you're getting into your 20s, you're going to look back and appreciate the fact that I was looking out for you all the time. So my message to you is that some strong feeling against your parents is common during adolescence, but it does not mean the love is not there. It's part of this process of them turning you loose and you're picking up the new responsibility that goes with the freedom. That's sometimes a kind of a painful process. And temper tantrums have no place in a good, Christian, loving home. If I was your parent, I would say to you, don't ever try that on me. Slamming doors and screaming and crying and falling on the floor and acting as you did when you were a toddler will not work. And even if I was thinking about changing my mind, I won't if that takes place. Let's sit down and talk to each other, and if it's reasonable, I will give in. If it's not reasonable, I will hold the line and hope that you understand. All right, let's talk about the third thing that you ought to know about adolescence in this final tape. And that has to do with the confusion over what you believe and think during this period of time. Now, much like what I said on the last item, as a little child, you were told what to believe. You were told what was right. You were told what was true. You were told what the world was like. You were told what values to have, what to respect, what not to respect. And it's very common going into adolescence for you to start thinking about all those things that you've been told and deciding whether or not you believe them yourself. So adolescence becomes an age of confusion about what you believe. You see, if someone tells you, black is good and brown is not good, or A is good and B is bad, or one is fine but two is better, it doesn't matter what the concept is. As a little child, you take that and you believe it, you accept it. But unless there comes a time in your life when you say, hey, wait a minute, do I really believe that? Is that really true? Unless there comes a time when you look at what you've been told, examine it for yourself, and then adopt it, not because you've been told it, but because you believe it, because you accept it, then it's never really your own, it's someone else's. So during adolescence, there is this time of questioning, where you analyze everything for yourself. You try to think it out. You try to make sense out of it and put it all together and decide if it really makes sense to you. And during this questioning period, there's an age of confusion that takes place. Nothing seems definite anymore. Nothing seems completely certain. Everything is open to question, and that's kind of worrisome. It also bothers your parents to see you out there struggling with things that they know are right, Let's take the view of the existence of God, for example. They know God is there. They have a personal relationship with Him. And He's in their hearts, I hope. And they tell you about Him and they teach you about Him. Then you come along at 15 or 16 or 17 and you look at the whole thing and you decide what you're going to believe about God. And you decide whether you're going to serve Him and work for Him and believe in Him. And during the time that you're thinking about this, there's kind of a confusion that comes along. I wrote in my book, Hide or Seek, a number of questions that teenagers often ask. I've already said, is there really a God? Does He know me? Do I believe in the values my parents have taught, the things that they've said I should believe in? Do I want what they want for my life? Have they misled me in any way? Does my experience say different things than what I've been taught? You see, for a period of years there, beginning during adolescence and continuing into the 20s, there's this strong self-examination that occurs when you look at yourself and what you believe. It's marked by an age of confusion, but it won't last very long. And I encourage you to take hold of those things that your parents have taught as your own, not because they've said it, but because you believe it. That's number three. Okay, let's talk now about the search for identity. And I have to start by asking you some questions. Do you know who you are? Really, do you know who you are? Are you acquainted with yourself? Do you know what you want in life? Do you know what your strengths and your weaknesses are? Do you know where you're going? Do you know what's important to you and what's not important? Are you acquainted with the person you've turned out to be or that you're becoming? Most people are not when they go into adolescence. They're not real sure who they are, what their life is going to be like, and they're not too well acquainted with each other. And adolescence involves getting acquainted with yourself. It's a search for identity. Identity means the personhood. Identity means who you are and how you're different from other people. Now let me describe a typical child to you. This may be you. I hope not, because it's a kind of an uncomfortable kind of thing that happens, but it happens all too often. This is a little child who is one of several children in the family, and so he doesn't get an awful lot of attention from his parents. They're very busy, they're working hard, they have a lot to do, and he's just one of a group at home. They don't read to him very often. They don't take him too many places. He's just one of maybe a crowd at home. Maybe there's three or four kids at home. Maybe he's the second or third child, so he's neither the eldest nor the youngest. He doesn't know exactly who he is in those early years. He comes through the preschool years and goes off to kindergarten, and then the first grade, and he has some trouble learning to read. Doesn't do very well in school, and he doesn't know why, and he starts to worry about it. He knows something's going wrong, that other children are reading faster than he is, and they're learning math faster than he is, and he's kind of falling behind, and things aren't going too well. He doesn't get happy faces on his paper. His teacher doesn't say, "Nice work, Johnny." He comes home, and his parents are not too happy about his schoolwork. He doesn't fail, he just never does anything outstanding. As he comes through school, he never sets any records. He doesn't make straight A's. He is not a remarkable athlete. He doesn't win the Freedoms Foundation Award. He doesn't become a superstar. You see, most of us are not terribly outstanding human beings. Most of us are just ordinary people. We never do anything during childhood that makes us know exactly who we are. We're just kind of common people. We don't play the trumpet extremely well. We don't become the very best baton twirler in high school. We don't star on the football team. We're not the best basketball player in school. We don't raise rabbits for fun and profit. We don't do anything that really sets us apart from all other people. We're then 15 years old, and we've never done anything that really made us know who we are. We don't know what we want in life. We don't know where we're going. We don't know what our major abilities are. And we're just kind of lost. If you find yourself in that boat, you will do a lot of shopping around during adolescence for who you are. And I suggest that you continue this, that you begin to look for your strengths. Go into the counseling office and ask to take some tests that will show the abilities that you have. The strong vocational interest test is a test that I would suggest that you ask your counselor to give you. This is a very good test which measures how your interests, how your likes and dislikes compare with those of people in various professions. Are you a lot like doctors? Are you a lot like lawyers? Are you a lot like carpenters? Are your interests like pharmacists? Are they like salesmen? What are your interests leading toward? You see, until you know these things, you don't know how to govern your life and what decisions to make about how you want to live your life. And this process is called the search for identity. It's getting acquainted with yourself and knowing what you want, knowing what your values are. Do you know what you believe about life, about truth, about people? Do you know what you believe about God? Do you know what you believe about children? Do you know what you believe about marriage? I hope that the tapes that I've made will help with that search for identity. See, that's really the whole purpose of what I'm doing here. I'm attempting to acquaint you with yourself so that when you have the feelings that I've been talking about, when inferiority comes, as it most likely will, you will say to yourself, hey, he mentioned that on the tape. I understand myself. You see, I want you to have a better grasp of who you are. And the purpose of these tapes has been to give you a better sense of identity to help you get acquainted with yourself. But you use these tapes as not an end in themselves, but as a springboard. Talk to other people about what they see in you. Talk to your parents. Talk to your pastor. Begin to search out where you're going and what this life is all about. And then it won't be so confusing to you, and it won't be so uncomfortable. One more comment needs to be made there in regard to the search for identity. And it has to do with the sexual identity that's coming. You see, you've been little girls and little boys, and very shortly now you're going to be men and women. And you girls will begin to feel more like women and take on the role and the way of thinking and the way of acting that women do. And the boys will tend to identify more with men and take on the masculine role that was intended for men to play. And you have to do some searching there to find out exactly what it is. I heard a story the other day of a little boy and a little girl that had just gotten acquainted, and they were talking to each other about what they were going to do. And the little boy said, I got an idea. Let's play baseball. And the little girl said, oh, no, I wouldn't want to do that. Baseball's a boy's game, and it's catching balls and everything, and I wouldn't want to play baseball. And he said, okay, then let's play football. And she says, oh, no, I wouldn't play football. You're throwing the football around and you're running and you're falling and skinning your knee and everything. No, that's not a girl's game. I wouldn't want to play football. He said, okay, I got an idea. I'll race you to the corner. And she said, no, that's girls play quiet games. We don't run and chase around like that. No, that's not a girl's game. I wouldn't want to do that. And he kind of scratched his head a little bit trying to think of what she'd want to do. And he said, okay, then let's play house. She said, good, I'll be the daddy. I think she was just a little bit confused on what her role was as a girl and as a woman, and she may have some fishing to do, and maybe you do too, to find out exactly who you are and what kind of behavior is expected from you. I think the easiest way to find out who you are and how to play the adult role of your particular sex, whether it be man or woman, is to watch an adult that you have respect for and try to be like them. It's called identifying with them. If it's your mother or a teacher or somebody who is of the same sex that you are, watch them and learn how they act and learn how they think and how they talk, and you will gradually find that it's natural to you to be something like that, even though you're an individual. But all of this comes under the heading of the search for identity. It's also part of growing up, and it's something that I think you will find more successful if you realize what's actually taking place. Well, we've come down to the end of the fifth tape. We have talked about some of the things that I think are most important for you to know. There are hundreds more, but there's only so much that you can absorb at this stage in your life. And the next tape, the final tape, is going to be devoted to a rap session with teenagers, those who are already in that age and those who are already experiencing some of the things I've been talking about, to give them an opportunity to tell you what it's been like. It's been a long time since I've been a teenager, and what I want to do on the next tape is to give you a chance to hear from those who are just a little bit ahead of you, those that are already down the road a ways for most of you. And I assume that some teenagers are listening to this tape, so everything will have to be changed just a little bit from your point of view. But on the remainder of this tape, let me just make the closing statement, going back to the point where we began on the first tape, dealing with the matter of inferiority again. I urge you one last time not to let that noose be placed around your neck, not to allow yourself to go down into that spiral and suffer that agony of feeling inferior, feeling not worthy, and not having anything to offer the world, and confused about who you are and what life's all about. So many teenagers struggle at that point, and it's just not necessary for you to do so. If there's one thing that I hope these tapes accomplish, one thing, if I can only have one objective from doing this, it is that I hope some of you can be urged to avoid that dark canyon of inferiority by having heard these tapes, by knowing that it happens to everybody, or almost everybody, so that it's not unusual when it happens to you, and it's just something that you can avoid by setting your jaw and clenching your fist and saying, I will not give in to that. It's not for me, and I have nothing to gain by that. Okay, let me conclude my comments on this tape series with one more important message. This is my final comment to you, because I'll be rapping with the teenagers on the final tape. But this may be the most encouraging thing that I can say to you. It's a simple little message in three words. This you can be sure of in adolescence. Normality will return. Now, what does that mean? That means that I'm talking to most of you now before you go into this stage. And it will be an exciting and an encouraging and a thrilling time of life, but will also be a time of life when many new adjustments are necessary, many new feelings will be felt, and some new threats and some new fears will come along, and some new conflicts and some new challenges. And when you're in the midst of all of this, and when you're down and you feel like life is going to pieces and nobody cares and nobody likes you and you don't know who you are or where you're going and it's all a big confusing mess, and when you ask for a date and you get turned down and you don't think girls will ever like you again, or if you're a girl, you don't get invited to the all-school party, and you come home and it seems like your parents don't understand, and your brothers and sisters are agitating and giving you a hard time, and all the problems of life seem to be on your shoulders, just remember this moment right here and the three words that I said. Normality will return. Just as I can predict that you are going into adolescence and that your body's going to change and that your emotions are going to change and that your attitudes are going to change, just as I can predict that some of these things are coming, I can also predict that you're going to come through that time and it's going to look different on the other side of it. In some ways, it's like a tunnel. You can see it in the road ahead and you know you're going into it. But as long as you keep traveling forward, you know you're also going to come out the other side. And adolescence is like that. You are going into it, and you're also coming out of it. It's a phase that you pass through, not a permanent affliction or disease that falls upon you. In fact, I think it's a very exciting time of life. If you don't get shook up by it, and you don't get scared by it, if you know what's coming, then it can be the most thrilling time of life at all. And that's why I've recorded these tapes, to help you make it that way. But even if you find it miserable, even if you don't get along well there, and even if you run into some of the problems that I've warned you about, just remember, normality will return. And I would hope that you would keep these tapes handy. And when that moment comes, and you're in the conflict, go back and listen to them and see if I wasn't right in what I told you was about to happen. See if I wasn't right when I told you that these feelings were coming and that these changes were taking place. If I was right in those things, I will also be right in the final message. Normality will return. Normality means things will become normal again. Things will smooth out. The things that used to tear you up won't bother you anymore. The things that you used to worry about will no longer be fears. The things that used to threaten you will no longer threaten. The people that you used to fight with will be your friends again. And this is part of the process of growing up. Remember what I told you in the beginning, that until you fall down as a little child, you can't learn to walk. You had to fall in order to learn to walk. And you also have to go through some of these rather trying times in adolescence in order to be an adult. But that's the challenge of growing, and I think you'll find it an exciting time of life. And in whatever you do throughout your life, I urge you to remain friends with Jesus Christ, for there is no greater decision that you can make and no more important issue with which you will have to deal as you choose for yourself. Your parents have taught you and trained you, but now it's going to be handed to you to make your own choice. Nobody can force it on you. You can go either way. Every man has to choose for himself. And I leave you with the conclusion of Solomon, who wrote the book of Ecclesiastes. And this entire book is a struggle with what life is all about, what its values are, and what's meaningful. And here's what he said in the last chapter, chapter 12, verse 13. Here is my final conclusion. Fear God and obey His commandments, for this is the entire duty of man. And Jesus added to that the commandment of love. You put those things together and your life will be successful, regardless of what happens to you. May God bless you, and I hope to meet you sometime. Thank you for listening, and I wish you the best on this freight train called adolescence.